It's the evening of the 15th of December, 1893, in the West African port of Douala. It has become an important entry point for German imperialists to their new colony of Cameroon. Unbeknownst to the white men in the newly built government buildings, one of the most notorious battles in the fledgling colony is about to ignite. About 60 Dahomey men and around 50 women, originally from Benin, have decided to revolt against the German colonialists. They break into the armory, seize weapons and ammunition, and lay siege on the German government buildings. Some background. The Dahomey women and men found themselves in Cameroon after being bought as freed slaves by the German colonial administration. They were to serve as soldiers and servants of a new colonial police force aimed at neutralizing resistance to German rule. They were considered a cheaper alternative to mercenaries who were employed in East Africa. But the group was badly treated, received little to no compensation, and the final straw was the brutal treatment of the female contingent. German officers had the women flogged with hippopotamus hide whips, and some were routinely raped by official Heinrich Leist. It set in motion the so-called Dahomey Revolt. Under fire, the German colonialists sheltering in the buildings managed to escape to the anchored cruiser Nachtigall. For 6 days, the Dahomey men and women held the fort, and it was only after the arrival of 3 cannon-wielding German warships that the revolt was put down. For their act of resistance, the remaining men were hanged, while the women were sent as forced labor to faraway plantations. It became a colonial scandal in Germany, ending the careers of Leist and Governor Eugen von Zimmerer. This was just one instance of resistance from women and men to the excesses of German colonial rule in Cameroon. Leaders like Rudolf Douala Mangabell and in Germany Kwame Martin de Bobe are familiar. But precious little is known about female-led resistance movements, according to historian Professor Confidence Ngam of the University of Bamenda.
It is easy to trace the figure in the British colonial history, but in the German colonial history, women played but roles that were not recorded. The person who is openly accepted to play an open role at the time, who was talking about it in the time, was the Queen Mother.
That is not to say women did not resist Germany's 3 decades of colonialism, especially during conflict, of which there was plenty. And contrary to preferred German narratives of the time that talked about taming wild subjects, colonial conquest and punitive expeditions meant going to war against entire communities, regardless of gender. After taking control of Cameroon's coastal areas, further military campaigns subjugated the Mabea and Bakoko communities by 1892. The brutal and sadistic reign of Governor Jesco von Putkamer from 1895 led to more spilt blood during the so-called Adama Wars from 1899 to 1907, and the Bulu resistance, which was finally put down in 1901.
When it had to do with armed resistance, women played the role of spies. In fact, we understand that within a traditional society like that of Com and war itinerary does not just depend on the sophisticated intelligence like it is in our days. It depends on the spying. It depends on provision of communication. It depends also of provision of logistics. And so women worked very actively in such domains to provide logistics for the war, providing food for the soldiers, preparing the soldiers for wars, participating in religious and ritual activities which were believed to be able to sustain the economy of war. And again, treating the men, those who were wounded in the process of doing so. So, and taking care of the society when men went to war. So,
it was an era of economic growth for German colonial enterprise. But for Cameroonians, it was a time of forced labor, punitive expeditions to subjugate communities, floggings, rape, and forced concubinage. Subservience to white men became paramount, and the regime was so brutal that King Ndumbe Lobe Bell of Douala led a delegation to Berlin to protest against von Putkamer's cruelty. The brutality was such that even local missionaries and the German imperial government protested against the colonial administration. Yet, this violent climate also upended domestic life for all indigenous communities, as German plantations and infrastructure projects sought labor, often coerced, and towns drew in rural people.
The German administration became ruthless and distorted the polygamous networks that were already established. The Germans needed these people to provide not only labor for the plantation, but labor for public good, for public development, like roads, like bridges, like construction of the German structures and all of that. So women could refuse their husbands and their children from participating in this, because they found that those who held their fame were disgraced by the Germans in a lot of things.
Unlike in Europe, where the effects of the Industrial Revolution and other factors had caused clear divisions in gender roles, Prof. Walter Nkwi of the University of Leiden contends that gender separation only became a factor in Cameroon during German colonization.
It is almost a very strong debate that some societies in Africa did not even have they don't know how to translate this concept gender. At the coming of colonialism, there was a very sharp twist. Colonial powers came in with their colonial cultural backgrounds. German colonial rule was masculine. It was about men. And so men's power were reinforced by colonial policies. Men were recruited into the plantations, they were recruited in the mines. Women actually began to play a subordinate role. The women were not allowed to work in the plantations.
While it would be wrong to characterize Cameroonian societies as a utopia for women before German colonialism, many sources indicate a far less regimented separation of roles from family life to the battlefield. Perhaps one way to explain the German colonialists' harsh treatment of women was their recognition of female importance to local societies. They realized that brutality against women or the targeting of female icons was a way to force societies into submission. And one particular case springs to mind, one that brings this issue all the way to the present day. Probably one of the most recognizable leaders in Cameroon is called Ngonso. Actually, she is a sculpture venerated by the Nso people of Cameroon.
Ngonso founded the kingdom of the Nso people.
That's historian Michael Ndibancho.
During the period of, you know, migration, they reached at a certain moment whereby there were two of them, the man and the sister. They now had to separate. And the man remained and formed his own kingdom, which is the kingdom of Fumban, a place called Fumban in Cameroon. And then Gonso continued to forming another kingdom of the Nso people. And then Gonso had to rule those people for so many years. So when you find it, the Nso people is a very, very powerful community in Cameroon.
In the early 1900s, a German colonial officer came into the possession of the Ngonso sculpture, which was revered by the Nso as the founder of their people.
The Nso people are crying that statue.
German narratives of the time claim that the artifact passed into German hands peacefully. But it does beg the question which society would give up such an important object so willingly. It is known that the Germans stole many important cultural items as war booty, and in other cases used force to decimate the cultural heritage of Cameroon. We also know that the Ngonso sculpture arrived in Berlin in 1903, and for many years was displayed in German museums. Getting Ngonso back to Cameroon has been the mission of activist Sylvie Njobati, who sees it as part of her Nso community heritage to get Ngonso back.
The burden of proof was put on me as a community member. You know, I had to prove that the Ngonso was, you know, very important to us as Nso people. I had to actually try to make a case for why restitution should happen. which, everything being equal, should not be the case.
She is based in Cameroon and runs the Web of Plunder Initiative, which aims to get African artifacts in European museums returned to their original owners.
As a matter of fact, the burden of proof should be on these museums and the institutions. And so the fact that I would spend sleepless nights trying to build up profiles of colonial looters, so which also meant that there was this general unwillingness to engage with me, because people were not just ready to give up what they have known to be theirs for some time now, for a very long time, for more than 120 years. But also lack of information was really a problem, because all the information we are relying on are sources of the colonial looters themselves.
The battle for Ngonso is still ongoing. She still resides in a German museum and is actually due to be returned to Cameroon. Meanwhile, she has become symbolic of restitution claims against former European colonial powers. And she's also become an unlikely symbol of the unknown women, whose importance was recognized in their communities, but not by the colonial regimes they resisted, quietly or in war. This special feature was brought to you by DW with support from the German Federal Foreign Office. I'm Kai Nebe.